IELTS Practice Tests 2 by James Milton, Hugh Bell and Peter Neville. Copyright Express Publishing. All rights reserved. Listening Test 1. You will hear a number of different recordings and you have to answer questions on what you hear. There will be time for you to read the instructions and you will have a chance to check your answers. The recordings will be heard only once. The test is in four sections. Record all your answers in your test book, and at the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to a special answer sheet. Now turn to section 1. Section 1. You will hear a conversation between a travel agent and a student booking his flight home. First, you will have some time to look at questions 1 to 8. You will see that there has been an example written for you. On this occasion, only the conversation relating to the example will be played first.
So Neil, how nice to see you again. Going home for a holiday?
Not this time. I've finished my studies and I'm going home to start work. So I need a one-way flight to Delhi. Next week, preferably.
Sunil wants a one-way flight to Delhi. So one-way has been written in the gap in the example. Now we will begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, as you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen to the discussion carefully and answer questions 1 to 8.
So Neil, how nice to see you again. Going home for a holiday?
Not this time. I've finished my studies and I'm going home to start work. So I need a one-way flight to Delhi. Next week, preferably.
Let's see what I can find on the computer. Now. Monday next week, Nothing on India Airways, that's all booked up. No economy class flights on English Airways either. Just business and first class. Do you want me to get a price on those?
Why not? Maybe I can afford to treat myself.
That's £895, including tax. Departing 1500 hours on Monday and arriving Delhi 0325 local time on Tuesday morning. That's a direct flight from Heathrow, of course.
Phew, that's expensive.
Yes, but you do get the benefits of travelling business class. Much more leg room, important on a long journey. You have your own TV built into the seat. Lots of other things. But most importantly, as a business class passenger, you've got much more weight allowance on your baggage, up to 50 kilos.
Oh, that's good. But it's expensive. What about other airlines?
Okay. Those are the only two direct and scheduled flights. But let's see what other deals we've got. Now, Air Bronco. They fly via Moscow. There's a 6-hour stopover in Moscow and another stopover in Karachi. Departure from Heathrow, Monday at 12:05 and arrive in Delhi at 16:30 local time on Tuesday. It says here baggage allowance is only 20 kilograms and they're very strict about that. The fare is only £212, though.
Okay, I've noted that down. I have an aunt in Moscow. Maybe I could see her between flights.
Indeed. Ah, here's a better-looking one. DGB Airlines. They're new. You pay a bit more, £299, but it's still cheap. Depart Heathrow, 12 noon Monday, and arrive 10:15 on Tuesday. There's a stopover in Istanbul, but you don't change planes. 25 kilograms of luggage. Ah. But no in-flight catering, so you'd have to take your own sandwiches and drinks.
No food on the flight? I'm not sure about that. Anything else?
Not from Heathrow, but here's something that may interest you. Karachi Air Tours. £383 departing 11:35 on Monday and arriving in Delhi at 5:05 the Tuesday morning. One stopover in Abu Dhabi. But the important thing is that it flies from Cardiff. That'll save a lot of time and effort getting to the airport from here.
Before the discussion continues, you have some time to read questions 9 to 12. Now listen carefully and answer questions 9 to 12.
Got all that?
Yes, I think so.
What about making an immediate booking? It's a good idea to do it now as the flights are quite full already. And if you leave it until tomorrow or even next week, you may find you can't get a seat and you'll have to wait till next month for a place.
All right, just one question. How much would I pay for excess baggage?
It's generally about £5 or maybe £6 per kilo.
So even if I have double my baggage allowance, I'm not likely to pay more than, say, £150? Then I can't really justify going business class with English Airways and paying so much, even if it is the fastest flight.
If cost is important, we'll have to look at the others. You'll definitely have more than 20 kilos of luggage, will you?
Definitely.
Then Air Bronco is out of the question, even if it is the most reasonably priced. You can't have more than 20 kilograms of luggage.
Okay, so I'll visit my aunt another time. Karachi Air Tour seems the best, even if it costs a bit more. It's quicker and I'll save money not paying for food or a bus to Heathrow. It looks a pretty good deal.
I'm sure you're right. Shall I go ahead and book that then?
Let me think about it. I'll let you know.
That is the end of section one. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Section
now
2. Turn. You will hear the travel agent describing the rules and conditions for taking the flight. First, you have some time to look at questions 13 to 16. Now listen carefully to the agent and answer questions 13 to 16.
Okay, Sunil, I know you're a regular traveller, but there's a new instruction issued by the government that says agents have to go through the rules and safety procedures of the flight before we can issue tickets. It's for your own good. Well, first of all, you have to make sure you pack your case yourself and never carry parcels for anyone else, even friends. It sounds rather hard, I know, but it's better to be safe than sorry. Of course, you can take presents for your friends and family that you've wrapped yourself. And remember to always switch off your mobile phone before you board the flight, as these devices interfere with radio signals. Flammable materials, like the liquid used to refill lighters, are banned from flights. But now that smoking is prohibited on planes, you don't need to have this, or cigarettes, or matches on board. You can buy these articles at the destination. And remember, it's advisable to wear your seatbelt at all times during the flight in case there's turbulence. Good. All the official business over and done with. Now, how can we make your trip more enjoyable? It's a good idea to take some books and magazines with you to help pass the time. You'll be on the plane for hours. You'll be given a boarding pass at check-in, and it's essential you retain this throughout the flight. You'll have plenty of meals on the plane, but maybe you could take some sandwiches with you to have as a snack during the stopover. You probably won't have any currency from there, so you wouldn't be able to buy any refreshments. We don't want you to go hungry. What else? Ah, yes. And of course, you need your passport. You certainly would not get through departures without this documentation, so make sure you keep it on you.
You now have some time to read questions 17 to 20. Now listen carefully and answer questions 17 to 20.
Okay, now here's your ticket. Your flight leaves at 11:35. Check-in time for most international flights is 2 hours before departure, but Cardiff is only a small airport, and the scheduled check-in time is actually only 1 hour before departure. Be careful, though. If you get to the check-in later than 11 o'clock, you may not be allowed on the flight. Now, how can you get to the airport? There's no train connecting you directly to the airport. You could catch a Cardiff Travel Services bus to take you to the airport, but to be honest, I doubt that's what you really want. They'd collect you hours in advance because they go around to lots of different stops to pick up a whole lot of people. Takes ages. If I were you, I'd call a taxi, because for £20 it'll take you from your own doorstep to the airport at the time you want. And that's cheaper than CTS anyway. But that's just my opinion. It's up to you. Let's check how much luggage you have. Around 35 kilos. That's about 13 kilos over your allowance. You're only permitted to take 22 kilos with you on Karachi Air Tours, so I'm afraid you'll have to pay excess baggage. Fortunately, they don't always charge you for the full amount. You will likely pay for about 10 kilos extra. You'll be closing your bank account, I dare say, but you should change your cash into traveller's cheques. You could do this at the bank, but it's better at the foreign currency exchange desk at the airport, as they certainly take less commission. Okay, I think that's everything. Have a good flight and good luck when you get home.
That is the end of section 2. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Section 3. Now turn to section 3. You will hear a discussion between three students about writing abstracts. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 26. Now listen carefully to the discussion and answer questions 21 to 26.
I've started trying to write this abstract, but it's really hard.
I know, but have you done what Dr. Ray suggested?
Well, I looked at the notes we were given and did what it suggested there.
The ones Professor Smith wrote for students?
Yes, those. They suggested writing what you did chapter by chapter, but I soon ran out of words.
I'm not surprised. That may be one way to summarise what you did, but it's nearly impossible to condense the whole thing into 300 words that way. You should do what Dr. Ray said and go for the throat.
What does he mean by that?
He means that you've got to make the reader interested by putting your most important ideas right at the start so that the reader will want to know more.
Or pass on if it isn't relevant to them.
I suppose that's right. He said something similar to me. He said a good abstract would indicate the quality of the dissertation to follow. Oh no, it was Professor Martin who told me that.
But he can't just put the results there. Dr. Klemper told me quite specifically that I have to indicate how I carried out my experiments, what the technique was.
That's true, but he also said you shouldn't write all your findings in the abstract. If you did that, no one would bother to finish it. It'd be pointless continuing if you knew all the information at the beginning.
And I also remember someone telling us an abstract should be direct, to the point, and not over long. I think it was Dr. Ray. He said most people want to read a brief summary as they're more concerned about the actual dissertation. Hold on, that was Professor Smith's advice.
You now have some time to read questions 27 to 30. Now listen carefully and answer questions 27 to 30.
Well, I think I'll put my main results first in my abstract. I can begin it something like, contrary to accepted theory. That should grab the reader's attention.
You'll disregard Professor Smith's notes?
Yes, I think so. I don't think the method he suggests is really appropriate for my dissertation. You know, this discussion has been very useful. I have a much clearer picture now of how to write my dissertation. I can get this abstract finished this week and give it in to my supervisor next week. If she's happy with it, I'll get it handed in by next month. No, wait, I only have the finishing touches. So I'll get it handed in earlier, by Easter.
That's great. I wish mine was nearly so close to completion. It'll be next year before I even finish my first set of experiments.
Me too. I've had to wait such a long time for the equipment and laboratory to become free.
It depends how long it will take me to write up the theoretical part of the dissertation. It could be this year or next.
My theory part is done, and if the experiment results fit in with the theory, it should be quite a quick write-up. If they don't, then I've got a lot of thinking to do, and I've no idea when I'll finish.
Same with me, but enough of our worries. What are you going to do when you finish? Take a holiday?
Well, I thought I'd visit Scotland before I go home, and maybe take a tour of Europe.
Good idea. You could always go on a trip after the exam and before graduation.
No, after the exam I have to go straight home. I'm due to take up my new position in July.
But that means you'll miss your graduation. What a shame. Can't you make it?
It's a pity, but I don't think that's possible. The flights are expensive and I couldn't afford the time just after starting work.
Maybe you could find the time to come to our graduation next year, if we finish our dissertations.
That is the end of section 3. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Section 4. Now turn to section. You will hear a lecturer describing the formalities and procedures which students need to complete before submitting their dissertations. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen carefully to the talk and answer questions 31 to 40.
Okay, I've got you all together so I can go through the various things you need to do before you can hand in your dissertations. Right. The first thing you need to do is get a certificate which says you have paid your fees to the university, or you've paid your university accommodation. It is to make sure you don't owe the university any money. Once you've settled all outstanding bills, the university finance section will issue you with this form. Mrs. Pearson deals with them. You probably don't know where her office is, so I'll tell you. It is in the main university administration building. You go in through big double doors into a reception area. On your right is the administrative section. Some of you may have been there for committee meetings and so on. Opposite that is a door with the cash office written on it. Actually, that's moved, and it's really the student loans office. Sooner or later, we'll get round to changing that sign. In front of you is a door with the finance section on it. There are four offices in this part. Directly opposite is where the cash office now is. You have to go there to claim any money the university owes you. Sometimes Mrs. Pearson works in the room on the right of the cash office, but her real office is the last office at the other end of the corridor. It's very light and airy. She's lucky to have two windows. Okay, once you've got your certificate, you can hand in your dissertation. The main body of your dissertation has to be double-spaced and on one side of the paper only. Appendices are single-spaced, and that includes the tables of contents at the beginning. And so is the abstract. The abstract is a summary of the dissertation, and you must put a copy of this at the front of your dissertation. You need to put your name and the title of the dissertation, the name of this university, and the date at the top, and it mustn't be more than 300 words long. You have to print everything in black ink. That includes the diagrams if you have any. You can't use colors because our regulations say the dissertation has to be photocopiable in black and white. But are there any geographers here? Okay, well, there are some special rules for you which allow you to submit maps in color. But this is the only exception. For all of you, there are a series of declarations which you need to type up, date, and sign. These go on a single sheet of paper and go after the abstract at the front of your dissertation. These are declarations that the research is yours and not someone else's, and that you haven't already submitted it for another degree. The dissertations must have hard covers. The regulations don't specify the color of the binding or lettering, but it is customary to bind dissertations in black. You need two copies of your dissertation for our library, and we'll need the certificate from Mrs. Pearson. Once we get all those things, we can send off your dissertation for examination.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of the listening test. You now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the listening answer sheet. Please stop